Okay, so last week we discussed, we went into a lot of detail. It was a jumping off point from the Shirsha Upanishad. And when I asked for, you know, what verse stuck in your mind, which one would you like to talk about, Rakshit Prabhu volunteered last week. And he gave us mantra number 6 or 7, was it? It was six. Mantra number 6 he wanted to discuss. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani vanu pashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tato na vijugupsate. So look at that again. Sarvani, all bhutani, living entities. Atmani, in relation to the Supreme Lord, eva only, anupashyati, observes in a systematic way sarva bhuteshu, in every living being. One page 43 in the Sri Shapanishad, mantra 6. Cha and atmanam, the supersoul, tata, thereafter, not, vijugupsite, hates anyone. So just for starters, in the word for word in this particular mantra, which mantra are we on?
6.
And what's the name of the book?
Upanishad.
Okay. So any of these words that stuck out in your mind when we read the word for word that seemed particularly interesting or compelling to you?
Anupashyati was interesting.
Anupashyati observes in a systematic way. So anu, right, means, well, you describe it. Give him the microphone. He's our Sanskrit scholar.
Anu can mean a lot of things. And a lot of times when a prefix is connected with a certain word, it can totally change it or it can mean something different. So I'm not... Anu a lot of times means following. Anuja in Sanskrit means this younger brother who was born, born second, Anuja is birth, Anuja. Krishna's Ramanuja, that's when Krishna was born after Ram. So I don't know all the meanings of Anu, but it was interesting when it's connected with Pashyati, which means he sees in the, it says here, a systematic way. That was interesting. It's a special kind of seeing, beyond the normal seeing.
A systematic, like one thing after another, right? Like there's the verse...
observing one thing after the other?
Yeah, that's systematic. Oh. One thing follows another. It's systematic.
So how is...
There's a system to it.
So how is that connected to the verse? Seeing systematically?
Well, the translation has now become that he who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all living entities as his parts and parcels.
So first you see the Lord, and then seeing, that's the point of Anupashyati.
Well, let's talk about this a little bit. There's three very important verses in the 11th canto, first part, first section of the 11th canto. And these verses we should know because it talks about Anupashyati, or systematic seeing. Now, there are different divisions of devotees. And in our scientific, thank you very much, in our scientific cultivation of devotional service, we should understand that there are different stages. Because then, if we know it's systematic and we can identify what stage we're at and what the symptoms of the stage is, of a particular stage is, then we can become encouraged that, well, I've passed this stage and now I'm in this stage, and what do I have to look forward to? What's the next stage? In the progression of advancement in devotional service, there are three very broad categories given. And they all have subcategories, but for now we can talk about the three broad categories of seers, of perspectives, of those who are advanced in devotional service to different degrees. And the first stage in Sanskrit is called
Kanishta.
So Kanishta Adhikari. We call Adhikari means kind of a qualification. Do you want to say anything about the word specifically? Kanishta or Adhikari? If you do it any time, if you have extra word meanings or etymology that you can put into it, then... Okay. So, yes.
Sanskrit adhika means more, but I don't know. That may have something to do with adhikari, but it may not.
Okay. We also have a Sanskrit dictionary here, too, that we could have out. I'm going to just pull that out, just in case anyone wants to consult. So, Kanishta, which means really in a general sense, you know, like a beginner, and then Madhyam, which means middle, and Uttam means the highest. So, of course, as I said, there are general categories because I've heard that Jiva Goswami also gives subcategories to these. For instance, there's a Kanishta Kanishta, there's a Madhyam Kanishta, there's an Uttama Kanishta, there's a Madhyam Kanishta, there's a Madhyam Madhyam, and there's Uttam Madhyam. There's an Kanishta Uttam, Uttam Kanishta, there's a Madhyam, there's a Uttam Madhyam, or Madhyam Uttam, and there's an Uttam Uttam. And many of these things are, some of these things are subjective. In other words, it takes one to know one, you know, to some degree. But we can also become Shastriya. And Shastriya Shraddha means that our faith becomes more and more based on our understanding of Shastra. It's very important to know Siddhanta, or to know the actual philosophy behind Krishna consciousness, because there is a Anupashiti. There's a way of seeing systematically and understanding through Shastra what stage we're at, what stage other people are at, how we should interact with others. Now, in this very important section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, which section isn't important, there's a description by one of the Navayugendras, who were all sons of Maharaj Bharata. Rishabhadev had, Bharat Maharaj had, what was it, Rishabhadev? Had 100 sons. Rishabhadev had 100 sons. And 9 of them were called the Navayugendras. They basically were very advanced, and they just took off and they traveled everywhere and they preached and they gave instructions. And their names were Kavi, Havi, Antariksha, Prabuddha, Pipalayana, Antariksham, and there's 3 more. So in the instructions of Kavi Yogendra, when he meets the 9 Yogendras, he's a king, and he was performing a ritualistic sacrifice.
Who was the king?
The king was named... why is it going out of my head right now? I'm so sorry. Maharaj Nimi. And Maharaj Nimi was performing a large sacrifice, and then these Yogendras just showed up at the yajna. Now, everyone stood up, including the fire, to receive them. They were so advanced. And so he recognized, being a cultured, advanced person, he recognized his good fortune. He began to ask questions. And he asked questions from each one of them. So the section in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 2, which begins his questions to each, he gives a whole series of questions and they answer them in succession. Kavi, Havi, Antariksha, Prabuddha, Pipalayana. So, when one of his questions relates to the gradations of devotees, and first he describes the Mahabhagavata, or the very advanced devotee, Uttamadhikari. He says, Sarva Bhuteshu Ya Pashyed Bhagavat Bhavam Atmanaha Bhutani Bhagavat Yatmani Esha Bhagavatottama. Esha Bhagavat Uttama means the highest Bhagavat. And what is his qualification? What is the highest person? Sarva Bhuteshu means in all objects, in matter, spirit, and combinations of matter and spirit. Sarva Bhuteshu, anything you can see or any combination that you can see. Ya Pashyet, anyone who sees in all of those things, Bhagavat Bhavam Atmanaha. Means he sees Bhagavat Bhavam within all those things, the ability to be engaged in the service of the Lord. Atmanaha means the Supreme Spirit, soul, or the transcendence beyond the material conception of life. So, Sarva Bhuteshu Ya Pashyet Bhagavat Bhavam Atmanaha. In all things, anywhere, whether it's matter, spirit, or combinations of the two, he sees a way to engage it in the service of the Supreme. That's the idea. And so he doesn't look at anything and say, like, well, that's Krishna's, that's mine. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, years ago, there was this famous thing he did where he held up this old beat-up Bhagavad Gita with the covering falling off and said, this is Krishna's Bhagavad Gita. And then he put it down and he picked up a really nicely kept copy. And he said, you know, it was pristine, no dog. And he said, this is my Bhagavad Gita. And so there's a way in which I might, not take care of Krishna's things, take better care of my things. That's one thing. Also, you know, if I'm a householder, I might have an altar where I keep the deity. And when it's time, you know, I might offer a little something, a little this and that, and then, okay, now close the door, and then the rest of the house is mine. TV, the hot tub, you know, whatever it is, you know, the rest of the house is for me. That's his little corner over there. The actual vision is somebody who's advancing, it expands from just, that's his little corner over there. It's like, you know, you drive up in his car, you're just using it to go do his service, and when you get to the front door, you knock on the door and open the door, and, you know, you say, Hare Krishna, welcome, Vanaji. And you say, Jai Lord, I'm home, I'm in your service now, in your house. No, but I say something when I come in. I don't always knock on the door, but when I open the door, I say, Jai Prabhupada, Jai, Sri Nitai Gaura Krishna Ki Jai, you know, like that's like you do when you come in a temple. But when I walk in the temple room, I ring the bell. Not every time, because it's in the thoroughfare, and sometimes I'm walking back and forth, and it's, you know, I'm not banging it every time. But I do, you know, try to cultivate that, you know. That I announce myself that I'm coming back into your house. But the idea is it expands outward. You know, it's not just like Krishna's in the temple and then when I go outside, everything else is mine, you know. Or even in my house, that's his corner over there and the rest of the house is boga for me. No, everything's meant to be offered to Krishna. And then, you know, like Prabhupada told this one householder devotee in Detroit, Michigan, who was bewildered because he felt overwhelmed by this surge of brahmacharis and sannyasis. It's 99% of the devotees were back in the old days. I mean, so many people were joining, and we had to fit people in cupboards to have them as a place to sleep. Literally, I mean, the old St. Louis temple, we had so many devotees sleeping in every room that they had to be, it's like sleeping in a submarine. They had to be put in there. And then, you know, if you come in late, you open the cupboard and I'm in here, you know. Sorry, Prabhu. You know, and you'd go out and find another place, you know. In any case, he came in that environment and he already had a family and he lived outside and so forth. And so when he came, he said to Prabhupada in a very meek and humble way, you know, look, you have all these followers and I live outside. I'm a householder. I live in a house. I got to raise my kids. What can I, you know, how can I be part of this? And Prabhupada said simply, this temple is made of brick and stone. Your house is made of brick and stone. In the temple, the business is for Krishna. If your house, the business for Krishna, no difference. You know, and he immediately relieved his anxiety. And that's the fact. So, sarva bhuteshu na pashyet bhagavat bhavam atmanaha. He sees everything as Krishna's and to be engaged in Krishna's service. And so he doesn't see anything separate from Krishna. And of course, tattenu kampam susamikshamanu bunjana eva kritam vipakam. He has this mentality that he's always hoping for Krishna's mercy to get more service. And he sees even adverse conditions as Krishna's mercy coming to him, that his karma is being burned up and he's just seeing his material life go. All these things are going, let them go. And he's also seeing it as Krishna's mercy to remind him to be, you know, wary of the material world and to take shelter at Krishna's lotus feet, not at padam padam vipadam, at a place where you could misstep at any time and cut your scalp off. I saw when I was going through the CNN this morning website just to see what happened to the governor of New York. For some reason, I was obsessed with that. And I just saw some crazy little video where some lady was riding in a go-kart and she got her scalp cut off. Her hair got caught in the engine and she got pulled down and her whole scalp got cut off all of a sudden. And so she had a, you know, anyway, it's a long story, but it can happen at any time. We're just, you know, having fun and the next thing your scalp's cut off. Yeah, you cut your shaved your head. You don't have to worry about that. It's one reason we do shave our heads, is you don't get your scalp cut off in a go-kart. Anyway, the devotee who sees everything in relationship to the Supreme Lord sees how everything can be engaged in his service, and he doesn't see anything separately from that. Bhutani Bhagavatyatmani means that all living beings are existing within the Supreme Lord. So he sees everything as a manifestation of the Lord's mercy. He sees all energy as emanating from the Lord, and he wants to engage it all in his service. And of course, he also sees the personality of Godhead. Premanjana chudita bhakti vilochanena santaksadeva hrideyeshu vilokayanti yam shama sundaram achintya guna swarupam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Lord Brahma says that for the pure devotee who has no separate interest, anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma anyanavritam, pure devotion means that there's no more separate interest. There's no more, this one's for me, that one's for Krishna. I'll give a little service here, but I'm holding this one back for me, just in case surrendering to Krishna just doesn't work out. You know, something like that, some separate interest.
What do we do when we know we're not supposed to offer something to Krishna? Food, obviously, bhoga, and we know we're not supposed to offer it, and we're starving, we got to eat something, and we can offer it to Prabhupada, I guess, but when, you know, I don't want to eat bhoga.
Well, there are two different standards. When you're in the temple, there's a standard we aspire to come up to is worshiping Krishna as a king. And we offer on silver platters and at the exact right time and with all protocol. When you're living in your house or you're working outside, everything should also be offered. That is, if it's offerable. As you well know, you can't offer something that's, you know, forbidden. It has eggs or meat or fish or something like that in it. But you can offer it at any time. In fact, Jadu Thakur, who received mangoes from Kalidas, who is intent on taking the remnants of every Vaishnav in Bengal, that was his goal, his mission. His mission statement was, I, Kalidas, take the remnants from every Vaishnav in Bengal. And he used to go around and he'd offer like mangoes or whatever to a pure Vaishnav or pure Vaishnav family. And then he'd ask them, could I have your remnants? And of course, Vaishnavs generally would say, no, you can't. I'm a fallen soul. You're more advanced than me. I can't give you anything. So what would he do then? Hide outside their house. Anyway, he went to Jadu Thakur's house and he offered the mangoes and said, could I please wait here for the remnants? And that's my mission. And he said, you're more advanced than me. I can't give you my remnants. So Kalidas said, okay. And he went and hid in the bushes outside, and he waited. Inside, Kalidas had received these mangoes. How did he offer them? He offered them to the Lord within his mind. And then he and his wife ate them. So you may be in all different kinds of situations where, and you will be, you know, unless you live in a temple, unless you've taken Kshetra Sannyas, which means you never leave the temple compound. Which has been, devotees have done that. Some devotees have taken that kind of sannyas. They never leave the deity. They stay there all the time, like Jananivas and Pankajangri, both of them. They've been there since, 1970? Since Mayapur was built, they've stayed there with the deities. I think one of them had to leave before it was even built, they were there, at the straw hut on the land. And then since it was built, you know, Prabhupada told what the first class situation for a pujari is, and that is never leave the deity. So they've never left for like 37 years or something. They've been there. Yeah, even there's a flood, they do the puja when the water's flowing up to their neck and snakes are going by and everything like that. They just keep going, you know. Vibhu Chaitanya, who just left his body. He was, when he came there, he just stayed. And he never left the property except one time, I think they talked him into going to a doctor or something like that. He said, never again. Rather die. I'll just stay here. That's what he did. So unless you've died, that most devotees work, live outside, or preach even. You know, Prabhupada, in the very beginning, it was very, you know, there were many issues that were not absolutely decided upon with the devotees, and they're still not. So we have to refer to Shastra, Sadhu, and Guru, right? So Prabhupada taught us you have to offer everything to the deity, don't eat anything. It says right in the Nectar Devotion, don't eat anything that's not offered to the deity, etc., etc. So then, what happens? The first traveling Sankirtan parties start going out around 1972 and 3. Devotees traveling across country. They're not at a temple anymore. First time, right? So they go into a store, they bring it back, and they start offering it, you know, to a picture or to whatever they can. Temple president in San Francisco says, hey, wait a minute, you can't do that. It says right here, you can only eat food offered to the deity. So a huge controversy arose. Well, luckily, Srila Prabhupada was in Los Angeles, and they both met him at the same time. You know, Prabhupada, here's what's going on. These devotees are out, you know, distributing books, and they're eating boga, you know, from the store. They offer it. Prabhupada said, you can offer it to the, he said, these books are our deities. You can offer it to the books. And he said about the fire of Sankirtan that you can take so many different things because it's burned up in the fire of Sankirtan. They're out there doing yajna. So he gave an exemption that, you know, can be offered in that way. You're engaged in service. You have some, you know, need to eat to fuel the body, keep doing your service. You have to make an offering. You can offer it to the deity in your mind. Now, this is not the, you know, regular protocol. Generally, we need to go through the motions. Like at home, it's just like, well, I'll just offer this in my mind, you know. No, but at home, the standard is different also. And one of the reasons is, if you're growing up with kids in your family, and every time they want to eat and they're hungry, you say, well, you got to wait till 4 o'clock to make the offering. After a while, they're going to start hating the deity because they're going to think, like, he's eating my food. You know, they're just kids. They don't know any different. You know, you got to wait, you know. They don't understand. So you got to be able to, like, make an offering any time. And it's a much more lax standard, according to Shastra. So the family can grow up, and Krishna's there, the proprietor of the family, but, you know, you can offer it any time and take. And so there's different ways to adjust these things, and of course, as I was going to say, you don't want to become too lax and then just start saying, well, I just offer everything in my mind and take advantage of it. You know, if you're a preacher and you're going out, and then, you know, if you start making so many exemptions and you become lax, then you can also make an aparad, separate yourself from that feeling of that feelingly offering things to Krishna. So in any case, if you are in a situation where you have to eat, and which will probably occur several times a day, if not more. And you know, and you're not in a temple, and you're somewhere, you can take something you have to eat, offer it to the Lord. And if it has to be in your mind or whatever way, then you do it like that, to the best of your ability. Okay, so the first class devotee sees everything in relationship to the Supreme Lord, sees all living entities as connected to the Lord, and sees everything to be used in the Lord's service. And so then the Madhyama devotee sees four things. Ishvare tadadineshu balisheshu dusatsucha prema maitri kripopeksha yakaroti samadhyamaha. This is very interesting in this verse. Yakaroti samadhyamaha means this is what Madhyams do. So it's in the activity, how they act in their life is what defines a Madhyam, how he's conducting his activities. And so a Madhyam sees four entities. He sees the Supreme Lord, Ishvare. Adineshu means he sees the devotees, Balisheshu, he sees innocent people who are not devotees yet, but he wants them to be devotees. And then he sees Dvisatru, which means people who are envious. They just don't like this whole idea about God and or how you're presenting it. they have a strong reaction against hearing about God or the whole presentation. So there's four different ways to interact with those kinds of people. First one, Ishvare, means you should develop prema or love. Ishvare tadbhineshu baliseshu dusatsucha prema maitri. And for all the devotees, you should make some friendship. Kripa means mercy for the balis, the innocent. People who are innocent, you should give them as much mercy as they can take. Not more, not less. Dvisatsu, you should be upeksha. Upeksha means you can neglect them. It means don't bother them, because you just rile them up and make them worse than they are now. So it's okay to let people go. This is part of the madhyam, or the preacher who's out there and sees different kinds of people. He has to make distinction. And there's somebody I should just humor him and let him go. I don't have to preach to him. I don't have to make him take a book or a piece of prasadam or everything. Or maybe I'll just... Like, a lot of times when I meet people who are fundamentalists in any religion, whether it's in ISKCON or whether it's in Christianity, and every organization has its fundamentalists. So generally... When I meet a fundamentalist, I like to just have as little contact as possible without making friends and not making enemies. Prabhupada told us how to interact with the monkeys in Vrindavan, who can turn on you at any second, and probably will, and will take advantage of you, even if you think they shouldn't. He said, don't make friends, don't make enemies. And so it's just sort of an indifference. You just sort of, don't look at them and don't, certainly don't taunt them. But don't also offer them a basket of... I saw at Radhakund, this lady, she just bought a whole bunch of fruit and she was holding it in her hand. And I think she was taking it back for her family. And she saw some monkeys, so she took one banana and she said, here. And then the big monkey came over again. There, forget about that. I want all of it. And he jumped on her and took the whole thing, And I just saw, that's a monkey for you, She's like, offer a couple bananas and go, no, I don't want that. I want everything you have. So, if I meet somebody on the street who's a born-again Christian and wants to tell me about Jesus, usually it turns into an endless loop. And there's not a lot of play in that, where I'm the way, the truth, the life, no man comes to the Father except by me, John 3:16, and that's it, And anybody in any religion could grab onto one or two things and just say, that's the only way it is. So, like with Christians, when I meet them and they say, did you know, da-da-da-da, I say, you know what? We need more people like you in the world. You're what's keeping the world afloat. I want to thank you very, very much, and then I just leave and go on to the next person. So this idea of upeksha means, we can avoid people who might not be ready. So prema maitri kripo upeksha means that there's love, we're cultivating love for the Supreme Lord and friendship for all the devotees, and we give as much mercy as possible to those who are innocent and ready for it, and we avoid people who are not ready for it yet or may be envious. So that's the middle class. And then in the lowest position, this is called the materialistic devotee, which is almost a contradiction in terms, because devotees aren't materialistic, but the sadhus are so kind that they actually can classify, they could say, okay, he's a materialist, but he's still a devotee. The prakrita devotee, a materialistic, is not spoken of very highly, by many devotees. Even Jiva Goswami says that a person has to come out of this position and move to the higher position in order to actually please the Lord or make an advancement. But here's how the person in the beginning position the Kanishta Adhikari, is mentioned by Kavi Yogendra. And he says, Acharya meva haraye pujam ya shradayehate natad bhakteshu chanyeshu sabhakta prakrita smritaha. That Acharya means the deity. And he becomes very expert at just seeing the deity in the temple. Pujam yashradehi hate, and he has faith in that process, but only in that. Because natad bhakteshu cha anyeshu, natad bhakteshu, but he doesn't see the devotees. He just sees there's Krishna. But the devotees, he could care less for the devotees. Welcome, nice to see you, Hare Krishna. And he'll, you know, even make offenses to devotees. There might be a case where, you know, we might have seen sometimes, you know, in a lecture or something like that, there's a talk going on. This sometimes used to happen. Prabhupada was giving a talk, and then, you know, someone would just barge right through the middle of the... Someone would come in for darshan to see the deities, and they completely neglect the fact that there was a devotee speaking about the Lord, and they would just charge right through the crowd, not even seeing that there was anybody else there, and go have their darshan and maybe, you know, make whatever their, you know, special offerings were, which may have been noisy also, you know, during the class and things like that, and then walk out, you know. There was a case also during Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's parikram. He used to take out thousands of devotees to go around Vrindavan. And at one point there was opportunity to see Sheshashayi. Was it Sheshashayi Vishnu? At one point the temple was going to be closed and they were moving on the next day. So everyone had an opportunity to go see that deity that night, but also Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, his divine grace, was going to be speaking that night. So now you had the choice to go see the deity or to stay and hear the devotees speak about the deity. So many people in the party went to see the deity. He says, well, we won't have another chance. And some stayed. Of course, our Srila Prabhupada was there. He was a beginning student at the time, you know, in the parikram, and he stayed to hear, along with some other sannyasis and people who stayed in that assembly. And, yes?
I was reading something from a disciple of Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada's brother, and I found something interesting. Sridhar Maharaj remembered that night, and he gave some more details about it. That Prabhupada said, oh, you know, I'll stay here. They were talking, because they were friends and knew each other. He said, oh, I'll stay here. What will I get if I go? And then Sridhar Maharaj said, nothing but eye exercise. And then they both laughed about that.
Yeah.
And if you remembered also what the topic of the talk was about, not that Prabhupada didn't remember, but he didn't inform us. Shira Swami quoted the exact verse, some verse by Rupa Goswami, and I remember, but the gist of it was that Bhaktisiddhanta starts out with explaining how Krishna can kind of create unlimited devotees, basically. He can, by his will, he can make people become devotees if he wants. Something to that effect. And, you know, that was interesting, given Prabhupada's vision of Krishna consciousness coming to the West.
Yes. And later on, Prabhupada told us that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he said he had marked me that he likes to listen. And he told us that he didn't, in the very beginning, even understand what he was saying. Exactly, because it was, you know, his presentation, his language, the whole thing. It wasn't entirely clear, but he was enthralled and he stayed and listened all the time, including in this one incident. That was his proclivity towards hearing from the authority. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta noted that about him. He said when he gave him initiated, I have marked him that he likes to hear. So... the others who did go off just to see the deity, actually, I heard that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta made a comment also. Was that who said it was just eye exercise, or was it?
Oh, that was between Sridhar Maharaj and Prabhupada.
Okay, anyway, there was some indication there that you know, those who had gone off to see the deity without hearing we're basically doing eye exercise, and that what can you actually see without hearing first? So anyway, the idea of the person in a Kanishta Adhikari is they only see that Krishna is there in the deity, but they don't see that hearing. They don't take advantage of hearing from devotees. They don't take advantage of associating or doing service for devotees and so on. And also, there's an implication here that they may mistreat devotees and all other kinds of people too. In other words, they offend other living entities. Although they see Krishna is there, they may be disrespectful to all kinds of other living entities. And that means Krishna is not pleased, because as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, one who is a kind friend to all living beings is very dear to me. An advanced devotee, we read last week, somebody who's harmful or inconsiderate, I forget what the other word was, harmful or foolish, cannot be a devotee of the Lord. So the idea here is that, you know, one only sees the Lord in one location. He's in the deity, but he's nowhere else. But a more advanced devotee sees that there are people who need mercy, and he gives mercy. He befriends the devotees of the Lord, specifically goes to the places where the devotees are so that he can spend time and do service with them and this type of thing. He worships the Supreme Personality of God, and he avoids the envious. And then the topmost devotee is described as he just sees Krishna everywhere and in all circumstances. And in fact, the description of Uttamadhikari is that he sees everyone, even conditioned souls, are engaged in Krishna's service, because he just sees Krishna's energy everywhere. And although someone in a medium condition might say, well, that person's in Maya, and this person's waking up to Krishna consciousness, so the Uttamadhikari would not make that distinction, would just say, well, they're all serving Krishna, except for one person. He sees himself as being excluded, that, you know, he feels very fallen, and that I'm not engaged in Krishna's service. So those are three general categories of advancement in devotional service that are given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's recommended that we come out of the Kanishta level, and especially helpful, Srila Prabhupada preached in such a way, and his legacy was such that those engaged in the Sankirtan movement would be engaged in all kinds of ways to use things in Krishna's service. And he gave us all these ideas, which were actually passed down from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how to use everything in Krishna's service. For instance, you know, at around the time that Prabhupada came to America on the Jaladuta, so many people in India were saying that it's you know you're breaking your tie with India and Hinduism and the whole idea of, you know, Krishna consciousness to them by crossing the ocean. What to speak of using all kinds of things as for a sannyasi to use, you know, tape recorders and cars and, you know, modern equipment and jets. Prabhupada went around the world at least 7 times, you know, preaching and going all different places. And, you know, some people might eschew those things and say, they're, you know, we can't touch that. But Prabhupada used it all in Krishna's service, because he saw all as Krishna's energy and meant to be engaged in his service. So he gave us that advantage right away of seeing how to engage everything in Krishna's service and see it in relationship with Krishna also, and no matter what occupation or what situation we're in life. So we're talking about the Sri Shapanishad, and last week we had discussed this verse, Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani vanupashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatona vijagupsate. Now, we just read the word meanings. Do you remember what vijagupsate means? Hates. So he Hare Krishna. Nice to see you. Hare Krishna. Hi. Is that comfortable sitting on the ground? Because there's all kinds of, you can also sit on the window seat too, if that's better for you. Yeah, please. Make yourself comfortable. Make yourself at home. We're just, this is our, as you probably heard, is this your first time here?
Yes.
Welcome. My name is Vaish.
Vaish?
Yeah.
Sharon.
Hi, Sharon. We're just, this is just like an open discussion. We're going through some of the books that we have, like Sri Shapanishad, and Malini will give you a little rack full of books so that you can see, you know. Anyway, don't feel obligated at all. You just be an observer if you or whatever you feel like. And we're basically just having an open discussion on some of these books and going through them. And we're very glad you're here. Thanks for coming. So this Sri Shapanishad is, you know, this verse, chapter verse number 6, we talked about how a person who's advanced, very advanced in spiritual knowledge, sees everything in relationship to the Supreme Lord, sees all living entities as his parts and parcels, and sees the Supreme Lord within everything, such a person never hates anything or any being. So that really goes along with the definition that we heard in the Srimad Bhagavatam as well, right? Sarva bhuteshu ya pashyet bhagavan bhagamatmanaha bhutani bhagavat yatmani esha bhagavatotama, that the highest level devotee sees everything in relationship to God and doesn't see anything separate. So that's the discussion, the verse that we discussed last week. And we went into some detail about that. We followed a thread. And one way of studying, actually, which is a fun way to study, is to follow a thread and see where it leads you. So we did that last week. And we started off with this verse from the Sri Shapanishad, and then we went into many other different areas in the Bhagavad Gita and into Srimad Bhagavatam. And if you have the books available, you can just start pulling them down and looking up things, and it's a nice way to remember. Does anybody remember from last week any of the thread that we followed? Well, that'd be a neat trick, huh?
We read the verse in Bhagavatam.
I remember the verse you read. Does anybody else remember the verse he brought up? Because I thought about it this week. And what was the relationship? No. The verse he brought up from the Bhagavatam last week was Tada Rajas Tamo Bhava Kama Labhadesh Chaya. Really? Oh, that's the one I remember you brought up. Oh, the first one you brought up was about how the devotees in Naimasaranya were accepting Suta Goswami as the captain of the ship, right? To lead them across the ocean. And then the next one you brought up was Tada Rajas Tamo Bhava. When you take to the process of devotional services, a gradual progression of the heart becoming purified of Rajas and Tamas specifically. Tada means at that time. Tada rajas tamo bhava kama lobadayas jayan. It means, kama means like desire, a thirst for material things. Loba means greed. So greediness, lust, greediness, kama loba adayas jayan, and all other kinds of things that go in that category. What's the rest? Cheta iter anavidam. The heart, because the cheta, the consciousness, becomes purified of all these things. Stitam sattve prasidati. And it becomes solidly situated in sattva and becomes happy. It's the first sign when the burden of and the symptoms of the disease start to go down. It's like if you're sick for a long time. Sometimes I've thought when I have the flu, that if I had to live like this, I probably wouldn't want to live because it's so miserable having a fever. You just think I'd rather be dead. But when it starts to clear up again and you start feeling health and you can eat again, that's a big deal. You can eat and, you know, feel strength and some prospect in life, then immediately, like, oh, there's a whole world. So in spiritual life also, there are things that are oppressing us. There are these modes of anger or lust, desire, greed, these type of things are the disease, the symptoms of the disease. But by the process of devotional service, they clear, they go down, and one can tell for oneself that he or she is becoming healthy. You know when your fever's going down, that the achiness is going away, and you no longer have a fever, you can tell for yourself, right? So similarly, we can tell for ourselves that we're no longer attracted to certain things, and that the lust and desire and those things are subsiding. So then we become happy, because it's like a great burden is lifted. So we talked about that verse last week, Tadarajas Tamo Bhava. At that time, when our heart begins to become purified, then we'll feel that reduction of those oppressive things that we're carrying around, and we'll become happy. It's the first symptom of advancement in spiritual life is joyfulness, actual happiness. Malini's about to say something. You look like you're about to say something. Okay, so that was something that we followed in the thread last week. Anything else? It's hard to remember what happened a week ago, what to speak of like 5 years ago or like five lifetimes ago.
We also
discussed the samsara prayers. That's right. Which are... And one of the things we discussed about them is they're not called the samsara prayers. they were called the Guruvashtakam prayers. And so we talked about the first verse in the Guruvashtakam. And I felt great satisfaction doing that. I thought about it a lot during the week, just talking about that first verse. I think we also talked about the Shikshashtakam. Is that what you said? We discussed the Shikshashtakam, and we also talked about the 10 offenses, and we started with the first offense, isn't it? Or was that on a Saturday? Because that tipped me off, because Ramaswamy added, if you look in your blue book, this blue binder here, you'll find at the very end, he added in a sheet on this persimmon-colored tab. I'd say salmon, but anyway, Padma Purana, the Brahmakanda, 10 offenses of the holy name. And remember last week, I think we talked about this first offense against the holy name. Did we not? We did not. We talked about it on a Saturday. It's all merging. Who did? Oh, well, there it is. Hare Krishna. Okay, and then we had a homework assignment for this week that was due. Does anybody that was here remember what the homework assignment was? A chapter a day? Wasn't it the homework assignment? That's your eternal assignment, huh?
We'll have to take down a verse.
Take down a verse. That means you did it. I could tell from the gleam in your eye. So how many that were here that heard the assignment got an opportunity to write a verse down and carry it with them? The assignment was to, what was it? We had three letters. To copy, carry, and look. CCL. Okay. So who got a copy? Everyone, raise your hand. You had a chance to copy, carry, and look at the verse, right? Okay. Raise your hand again if you got a chance to do it. Okay, don't worry if you didn't. It's no problem. You can do it next week. Let's hear a little bit about how it went of those who did the copy, carrying, and looking at the verses. And let's have the microphone. Okay, who's really chomping at the bit and really wants to talk about it? Yes, Jonathan. Okay, go ahead.
It became so interesting how much I enjoy just looking at it. I copied it right away and carried it. But I would always have it in my pocket. I remember one time at work, I wear scrubs at work, and so I would take it and put it in my pocket. And I left it in the pocket of the scrubs at the end of the day because I had to go and do something else. And I got home and realized it, and oh no! And then I remembered, I can just go write it down again. But yeah.
Oh, because the scrubs gets thrown into the wash or something like that,
yeah.
And that's it, right?
But yeah.
I see. So you did it again.
I did it again.
Oh,
but
nice.
It was neat. Like that I'm just constantly grabbing it and, you know, take it with me in every pocket. And so I always had it with me. And it really became a part of, like, my thinking, you know, throughout the day. I could just pull it out and look at it and go over it and contemplate, you know, what it actually means. So that was a really neat experience. And
wow. And can you tell us which verse you chose?
I took it from the Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Chapter 2, verses 28 and 29.
Ooh, wow. Okay, let's hear it.
The Sanskrit. Vasudeva para Veda, Vasudeva para Makaha, Vasudeva para Yoga, Vasudeva para Priyaha, Vasudeva param Jnana, Vasudeva param Tapaha, Vasudeva paro Dhammo, Vasudeva para Gatahi. And the translation is, in the revealed scriptures, the ultimate object of knowledge is Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The purpose of performing sacrifice is to please him. Yoga is for realizing him. All fruitive activities are ultimately rewarded by him only. He is supreme knowledge, and all severe austerities are performed to know him. Religion, Dharma, is rendering loving service unto him. He is the supreme goal of life.
Wow. And go ahead. You want to say more?
Just that it is such an amazing amount of material and just those, you know, few words that, you know, I could just think about constantly and, you know, think of it in different ways and how it all related to itself. And it was really neat just having it on a little card and being able to pull it out of my pocket and just go piece of Bhagavatam and just reading it and having it with me. So it
wow, and I'm so inspired just hearing that. Thank you. Let's give him a hand there. Good job. That was very nice, very sweet. Okay, who else is really eager to talk about their experience? Yeah, you look really eager. Okay, pass him the microphone. Okay.
I didn't do it for the first 2 days, but on the third day, I remember, you know, I didn't do that.
Good.
And actually, when we're doing the Bhagavad Gita, sorry, chapter a day, I chose two verses from Bhagavad Gita and wrote it down. And,
what did you write it on?
As you told, on the index page.
Index card, okay.
Index card. And so normally I'm not good at remembering the verses, but I think it helps a lot when you write it down yourself. And so I wrote the word to word also and the translation also, so that way you remember each and every word of it. And then whenever, actually, once you write it and next day when you wake up, it goes through your mind. So, and if it doesn't come, then you strive it. Oh, I want to remember, I want to remember. And then you look up. So that helps a lot. Throughout the day, like, you have some goal in mind. I want to remember this word. I want to meditate on that.
Very nice realization. Good job. Thank you very much. And the instigator in your house who got the whole thing going? Shall we hear? Hare Krishna.
Guruji, last Thursday, I was just worshipping my Gaudiya deities, and I thought, they are so merciful because they just accept whatever service I render, although my service towards them is so insignificant. So, and the same day, I was just thinking of, you know, browsing on the net, how can I improve my service towards them. And I was searching for some deity service, some information about deity service. And I found a verse very attractive from Srimad Bhagavatam. That's 3.9.25.
Wow.
And I thought, that is it. This prayer I should chant in front of my Gaudiya every day. And just after some time, I saw your mail coming in. and reminding me of the assignment which you gave last Wednesday. So I said that this will be my CCL for the week. So
can we hear the verse?
Sure.
And we have to go back to Nilesh too to hear his verse after yours. Go ahead. I forgot to ask you, sorry.
So asav adabra karuno bhagavan vipitha premasmitena nayanam guruham vishambhan uttaya vishva vijayaya chano vishadam mantya girapanaya chaturusha purana. The translation is, the Lord, who is the supreme and is the oldest of all, is unlimitedly merciful. I wish that he may smilingly bestow his benediction upon me by opening his lotus eyes. He can uplift the entire cosmic creation and remove our rejection by kindly speaking his directions.
Beautiful verse. And did you know that's, maybe you did know because you saw it in context on the web, but that's one of the verses you use to wake up the deities in the morning. That's why you've picked it, I guess. Nice verse and good job. Haribo. Thank you. Let's hear which verses you picked, Nilesh.
Yat karosi, yat asnasi, yat jyosi, tadasi, yat tapasyasi, kaunteya, tat kurusha, mat arpana. And it goes with this, I think these two go together. Basically, the meaning of this verse is whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, do that as an offering to him. That is the first verse. Mm-hmm. And the second verse is, if you do this, so subasum phale evam moksha shi karam karma bandhanam sanyasa yoga atma vimukta maam upasyasi. In this way, you will be free from the bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious rigors. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me. So I think these two verses are the crux of Bhagavad Gita. So if you just meditate on these, then
very nice. And Neelam, which did you write on a card also?
Yes.
Same kind of card? Okay. Nice. Looks real beautiful. Sweet. Thank you so much. Okay, who else had a card who went through the process? Praveena did. And he's passing it off. Kishore is passing it off. Okay. You want to go? Go ahead. Kishore, go ahead. Tell us the process, any realizations you had in creating it. You know, anything that came up for you.
I always wanted to remember a good number of verses, but I did not know a way to do it. So this proved me to be a good way of doing this, forcing myself to learn some new verses. So I picked, Praveena was asking me, she wanted to print a few verses and stick everywhere in the house. So that,
nice.
We didn't carry, but I think so. Whenever I use this near my kitchen washing utensils sink area, so whenever I wash utensils, I just have it. So this will be helpful.
So you put it up on the wall,
yeah,
when you're washing the dishes or something,
exactly.
And then you can look at it while you're doing that.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Very nice.
So that proved quite effective, actually.
Ah.
Yeah.
Washing a lot of dishes these days.
Yeah, that's my job in
the house. I once saw a little sticker that was on somebody's refrigerator that said, "A woman never shot a man while he was doing the dishes." Okay, let's go ahead.
We have a Sanskrit verse as well as word-to-word and translation. And what I found is if you go through the word-to-word meaning a couple of times, then it becomes easier to remember.
Nice tip.
So I picked, I think, 3 or 4 verses from Lord Ramana's prayers in 10th Canto, but I could memorize 1.5.
Very nice.
One I picked, the first one was 10:14:3. It goes like, Nane prayasam udapasya namaktayya jivanti sammukharitam bhavadiya vaktam sthane sthitam shudhigatam tanuvan manobhi ye prayasu jita jito pyasitai sthilokyam. So the translation is, those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge and with their body, words and mind offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees, certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds.
Bravo. Thank you. Because a couple thoughts, one thing that came to my mind about memorization is that it's not, you know, these verses are Krishna. And, you know, as we talked about last week, Krishna can reveal himself to us if he's pleased with our service and our intention and everything. And so it's, if we have that mood while we're looking at these verses and reading them, you know, in a sort of in a service mood, in a reverential way, and not necessarily trying to, you know, like, I'm going to get this one, you know, I'm going to capture it, you know. Or we can become fruitive like that also, like we can in anything. But, of course, Krishna can make us forget everything, too. There's a devotee that I know that knows millions of verses and, you know, can memorize very quickly and recite them easily and things like that. And I remember a couple of years ago at a big festival we were at, and somebody asked him to lead the prasadam prayers, the prasad sevaya, and then he got stuck like on the third line or something like that. And afterwards we were just talking about how, you know, it's not, we're trying to worship Krishna with this and not necessarily just collect verses or memorize them or anything like that, but do it in a, you know, in a reverential, in a devotional way, you know. And I've found personally the verses that I incorporate into my my puja that I do in the morning when I'm reading them to the deities, like in a prayerful way, I usually remember them very quickly, and they become something I don't even forget after a long period of time, even if I haven't revisited them. Of course, if I incorporate it, I do see them every day, mostly. I was thinking that the reason was because I was offering them as a prayer, and, you know, in that state of consciousness, I remember them more quickly. Okay, Praveena.
Yeah, I'm very poor in remembering the verses from the childhood. In my childhood, I used to have good memory, but later, like, I lost my memory. You have good memory, so I keep telling you, you have very good memory, you can learn so many verses, but I can't. But after the exercise that you gave, like, for a long time, I wanted to read some verses, and that one of my favorite verses is that is regarding the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the 23rd chapter, the first verse. So that was my favorite for a long time. I wanted to read it, but like somehow it was
in the Madhya Lila.
Yeah, in the
Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 23.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's a very simple verse, but I wanted to, like, it's Gaura Purnima, and after me getting the Gaura Gita duties, like, somehow I became attached to, like, Gaura Prabhu. So I was thinking, like, I'll at least memorize that verse. So, suddenly I was successful in that.
You did it?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, let's hear it.
Chinara dattam vijagupta vittam soprema namamrutam apamaram yogutatara gauraha krishno janibhya stamanam prapati.
That was beautiful. Wow.
So I started with the word-to-word meaning. It was so nice, the word-to-word, like after a long time, I heard this verse from Shivash Prabhu a couple of times. So it was a very nice verse. Actually, the meaning goes like this. I try to memorize with the words coming in, like each word. Mm. So even though I remember, I forget the verse, but I used to remember the word and then try to search for the Sanskrit, something like that. I started, but it was successful. The word to word goes like this. The most munificent supreme personality of Godhead, known as Gaura Krishna, distributed to everyone, even to the lowest of men, his own confidential treasury in the form of the nectar of love of himself and the holy name. This was never given to the people at any time before. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So, Chiraga, so it's a long time, and it's
long time not given to anyone, and that's being given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the verse 6. And to the Apamaram, the lowest of men, to even to the lowest of men, the mercy was given, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So that was so powerful, that was given by like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's a very confidential thing.
Mm.
It's like, it's after reading and after doing so many ignas and all these things, people will get that mantra.
Mm.
But we got it so easily just because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. And
uh-huh.
like with it. So it was a very nice experience.
Good work, Praveena. How you go? It's funny you mention that verse, because Srivas Pandit Prabhu was at my house last night, and we just happened to open up to the 23rd chapter of the Madhyalila. And he knows that verse. He started quoting it, and he asked me, because the name of my deities at my house are Shishinitai Gaura Krishna, and I got that name from that verse, because that's what Lord Chaitanya is called, Gaura Krishna. That specific verse. So it's an interesting coincidence, and a very beautiful verse. Thank you so much. And Praveena brought out an important point about looking at the verses and remembering them, that if you go through the word for word, if you go through the word for word and you look at, you know, what it means, it adds a lot of richness to understanding the verse, and also to remembering it too, looking at it from all different angles. Sometimes when I was learning the Shriyush Upanishad, I would say it backwards, because then I would say, well, do I really know it, or do I only know the next verse compared to the last verse? And I'd say, like, okay, we'll start from the end and go backwards and see if you can remember them going that way. Hey, you can do all kinds of things like that, and if you look at it from different angles, the verses and the shlokas together, it's helpful. Exposure is really helpful from all different angles. Thank you so much. Okay, who else would like to talk about their experience? Malini.
Yeah, you said to Prabhupada that you have I like to learn verses because some inspiration from you. I used to do that a lot, but the last 2 months I haven't learned any verses or anything. So your exercise was actually a good starting point for me to get back to that.
Nice.
One thing I like about learning verses is I would like to write it down with my hand. Mm. That's something which I like to do, so that when I write it down, I could remember it more efficiently than just looking at it. So actually, I did not do this exercise until yesterday night because I've been postponing it for the whole week.
Mm.
Yesterday I had this as my goal.
Satyadev was laughing because he did too. So.
I was greater than that.
I had a goal yesterday that if I would write it down, I wouldn't sleep. So I don't think I was that important.
Oh, goodness.
And this is the verse which Satyadev quoted last week. About the importance of spiritual master, and how only by having implicit faith in them that all the inputs of all the Vedas will be revealed to us. Because sometimes I think that if I read everything, then probably I would know. But from this verse, I got that even though you might read, but unless you have faith in them, they won't be revealed to us.
Mm-hmm.
You might go on reading. So I chose this verse. Yasyadevi parabhakti yathadevi tathaguru tasyaiti katitasnatha natashanti mahatmana. So only unto the great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the inputs of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed.
Thank you very much. About that verse particularly, a god brother of ours named Guru Kripa Prabhu had a conversation with Srila Prabhupada in which he asked Prabhupada, he said, what's the most important verse in the Vedas? And Prabhupada said, what do you think? And so he said, Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam. Prabhupada said, well, that's a good verse, but here's more important one. Yasya Devi Para Bhaktir, Yata Devi Tathagaro. And he gave that verse. Another thing I was thinking about was when I went to visit the samadhi of Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji, who was a famous devotee, a disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He's famous for his chanting. He was a Babaji. He only chanted. No talking, only chanting. He did a lot of bhajan. And in 1974 or 5, some of the devotees went there with their tape recorders and recorded a lot of his bhajan in Mayapur, which is still available today with really pristine sound because they used really high-end stuff, which was really hard to find back then, believe it or not. And they made some nice recordings. Anyway, when I visited his samadhi recently, one of his descendants, I think one of his disciples who's taking care of the place, was telling us that Kinchana Krishnadas Babaji, he would memorize shlokas from Srimad Bhagavatam and other places, but he had a rule that he would realize the verse before he would move on to another one. That was his rule. And I was thinking, well, I couldn't move on to practically anywhere. But no, an idea is there also that we try to enter into each verse, not that, you know, we just try to memorize millions of verses and we don't enter deeply into it. But, you know, sometimes Srila Bhaktisiddhanta would lecture on one verse for months and said that we could go on lecturing on one verse for the Bhagavatam for years, as a matter of fact. And it's really true. If you enter into just this verse that Malini gave or any of the verses that we've heard tonight, you can see the one that you picked, Yakoroshi Yadashinashi, you know, as your meditation every day. And every part of it, everything I do, everything I eat, you know, it can encompass your whole life, one verse, as a complete meditation. Maybe can we all move up by 6.5 inches, 6.5 inches up? So, who else had an experience with the copy, carry, and look? You did, and you're smiling. Okay, great. Let's hear about it.
I came across this verse last year, and I always wanted to read again, and I never found it. I asked Eva Mataji to, and she referred me to another verse, and after this lecture last week, I again searched for this verse.
Yes, let's hear. Now I'm curious what it is that you found.
It's quite big, though. It's 33:8.
Oh, good. What a beautiful verse. Yes.
I can sing it.
Okay, as you like.
That's my son.
Okay. He's responding to the verse, obviously. Okay.
ఆచార్య ఉపాసనం శౌచం స్థైర్యమాత్మ విగ్రహ ఇంద్రియార్థేషు వైరాగ్య మనహంకార జన్మ మృత్యు జరావ్యాధి దుఃఖ దోషాన దర్శనం ఆసక్తి రణభిష్ంగ పుత్రదార గృహాదిషు నిత్యం చ సమచిత్తమిష్టానిష్టోపత్తిషు మయి చానన్య యోగేన భక్తిరవ్య విచారిణి వివిక్త దేశ సేవిత్వమరసి జన సంసది అధ్యాత్మజ్ఞాన నిత్యత్వం తత్వజ్ఞానార్థ దర్శనం.
Wow. Nice pronunciation. That was really beautiful. Okay, and you want to read the translation?
Humility, righteousness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of evil of birth, death, old age and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest, even-mindedness with present and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance.
Wow, what a powerful verse. And can you tell us how you found it and why you were looking for it?
It's always been on my friends' minds. What do we do to
actually follow Krishna consciousness. I know there are many answers, but we always wanted to at least have some guide that we can look at every day. And it's every single item in this list is a huge task by itself. So I thought maybe if I can try one week and try it. So I want this brief summarizes everything that we're supposed to be doing.
And so you had heard it at one time, but you weren't sure exactly how to find it, where it was. And then who did you ask to find it again?
Neelam Mataji.
Oh, Neelam told you. Oh, how nice. And then you're happy to find it again.
Very happy.
Wow.
I know this is a big verse, and
yeah.
The translation is quite big, so that's
very nice. And you'll always know where it is now. Okay. Wow. How old is he?
He's 2.5 months.
Two and a half.
Before Manali's mother.
Really? So right around Gita Jayanti also?
Yes.
Just see. All these Bhagavad Gita babies. Yeah, smart babies. Smart table, smart box, smart babies. Nice. Oh, thank you very much. That was very, very interesting. Okay, who else was able to copy, carry, and look? Yes.
Prabhuji, I didn't have the chance to be here last time. Mm-hmm. I just want to share with you a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. It goes like this. It's between the conversations between Vidura and Rishi Maitreya. So they are constantly talking about Krishna activities, completely transcendental. And they get to a high, and then Rishi Maitreya just folds his hands and says, Yato prapya nivartante vachascha manasa saha aham cha anya imai devas tasmai bhagavate namaha. Which means, the meaning of this is
a mic.
Words, intelligence, mind, and ego, along with their respective controlling deities, have not been able to completely understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as He is. Therefore, we must offer our obeisances unto him simply for the sake of sanity.
Aha, uh-huh, nice. Thank you very much. What a gem. Very nice. Thank
this
you.
This is basically, this came to my mind because people think God is so cheap. You know, you go on the internet, if you just say God consciousness, so many things pull up and... You know, everyone says, oh, I achieved God consciousness in 1993. Oh, I was like April 1975. Well, you know, here is, Rishi Maitreya, who's like topmost yogi, Vidura, who's topmost devotee, both of them are devotees, and they're discussing transcendental topics, and they're conceding to the fact that we cannot understand him completely as he is. Therefore, for the sake of sanity, we just offer our obeisances. So that's just as simple as that.
Very nice. Thank you so much. Who's next? We're gaining so much by hearing how the other devotees went through the process of looking for a verse, finding it, what the experience was, the realization. Sri Priya Mataji, please pass her the mic.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for actually giving the idea of, reading a chapter a day and taking a pranam from Veda Ways.
And just so you know, it's not my idea. Prabhupada had, emphasized this quite a bit, that he wanted the devotees to go through the books, and especially he liked this idea of chanting a chapter a day. It's something you can measure. And anyway, go ahead.
So I just gone to Veda Ways and took a pranam of the chapter 5, the English translations. so that I really understand what I was reading. And what it really helped me with is, even though you read so much Bhagavad Gita, you know so much of so-called knowledge, which I probably don't really, but sometimes you get so angry. Sometimes you get so angry for small, small things, and you know you don't. You get sometimes feel frustrated about small, little things. But the whole week, every day that I read that particular verse, I mean, I'm reading the whole 3 pages, and it hardly took me maybe 5 or 7 minutes in a whole day. I never thought I could just finish a chapter in that little time, which I never attempted before. So in that every day when I read that. You know, don't take anything personally. Whatever you're doing, the fruits is not yours. So it's Krishna's. So if you're doing it the right way, that's fine. You know, just give up whatever you are not able to achieve. And if you're trying something very hard and not still able to achieve the result, it's okay, you know. So that verse, every day when I read it, every day it actually makes me so much calmer. And, you know, the way I would usually get... angry or something, I personally feel a lot of difference in myself. So I hope I'll be able to use it for a longer time. And I read one chapter every day. I never ever thought that it would take me only 5 or 7 minutes.
Let's give her a hand for that.
I thought I was going to take a long time, you know, just take a Bhagavad Gita and finding time, and then, you know, so many times I would read it during my lunch, or, you know, many times, as soon as I get up in the morning before I chant, I would just go over it. So it was, but really quick. I mean, sometimes I don't even really sit down to think what the meaning of it is or not. I thought as I read, I'll understand more, like, you know, talking about the similarity between analytical study and the devotional service. You know, if I think, oh, I have to go read the purport more in detail to understand that. I thought, no, I'm going to keep that, you know, as the time comes, but then I just have to finish my whole chapter.
Some powerful things that come from that. One is just how it can, you know, sometimes we think it's overwhelming to read a chapter or read a verse. We think it'll take a long time, but if we're organized for it, you know, it only takes 4, 5, 6 minutes to really go through a chapter once a day. And there are so many other things that we can spend 5, 6 minutes on without even thinking about it. But a concentrated effort of reading a chapter is very powerful like that, isn't it? And Sri Priya also mentioned just about, can you hold that up? Let's see. She copied that from the Veda base, just the English, so she can go through it every day. 3 pages. There's the whole thing, easy to carry around. I was going to make one other point about that. Oh, you had mentioned by reading the chapter, you found it easier to control your senses. And that's the same message we got from our very own Bhakti Leon of London, who, when he was here, I told him, you know, chant a chapter a day. He said, just which one? And since I was chanting chapter 5 at the time, I said, chapter 5. So he said, okay. And, you know, I just said, do it every day, no matter what, no matter what, no matter what. And he's been doing it. And he wrote recently, as I divulged a couple weeks ago, that he was feeling great spiritual advancement from doing that. He said his spiritual life has changed, that he's being able to control his senses. He's getting some power he never had before to perform devotional practices. And really, even the sadachar, which means the following the 4 regulative principles, which we know is an essential part for not disturbing our devotional service, you know, to follow that sadachar. That comes as an empowerment from the Lord. Not everyone can do that. And so these verses, you know, are giving us that power to do that. And we can hear it from personal testimonial devotees who make a vow to read them over and over again, to hear them. They get that power even more. Yes, Hansapriya.
Wondering. find it online, the Sanskrit worship verses, and I couldn't find it. So I
So you had a panic attack?
No.
No, just kidding.
I kind of looked up on the YouTube, and so I couldn't find it anywhere on the YouTube I found from Gaudiya Devotee. And then, so I didn't read it because I couldn't find the right one. And then today, when I found it again on the internet, when I read it, the fifth word really stuck to my head. So one day I didn't read it, and it kind of gave me the feeling of, because I was also listening to Prabhupada's lecture, and he said about the chanting, that when you chant, you have to pray that Krishna, you're my eternal master, and I'm eternal, your servant. So one day, when we think of Shikshastakam, today I was reading it with more attention, and the fifth word really stuck in my head, which was probably going all day in my
Very nice. Thank you very much for sharing. Yeah, this is something that, you know, when we pick a verse or a section and we go over and over and over it in different circumstances and think about it, it becomes like our verse, our section. You know, whenever you hear it quoted elsewhere, sometimes you have this experience. I've had this experience where, you know, you take the time devotionally to look at a verse, to learn it, and then, you know, you'll hear it quoted by somebody else, like, you know, another acharya or something in their commentary, and then you feel, oh, yes, I know that. And, you know, you feel real connection to it. And that's a connection to Krishna, because these verses are Krishna. They're not different. That was very nice. Okay, who else had an experience with the Copy, Carry, and Look program for this last week? Yes. So you have an ashtakam that you're doing every day too.
Acha.
And nobody can stop you, right? If you decide that this is what you're going to do, who can stop you? They can put you in jail and you'll still read your ashtakams. Really, it's true. It's something you take with you everywhere. And so this is, we make a decision ourselves. This is an independent choice we're making to surrender to Krishna, to give our mind. He says, man mana bhava mad bhakto. So he said, give your mind to me. So how do you do that? In the Bhagavad Gita, he says, by studying this sacred conversation, this sacred dialogue, you're worshiping me by your intelligence. This is absorbing the mind in Krishna. Taking these verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, which are Krishna himself, we carry Krishna in our mind like that, and in our heart, they become, you know, and we'll realize more of them too as we go through our life. Okay, so we have time for a few more who want to share about their experience with the verses. Who else wants to share? Okay. Mother Usha had her hand up, so she'll go first and then Dave G. He was volunteered. Tell us a little more. Why did you pick that verse? You wrote it on a card? Just see, nice. It's okay if you just did it recently, too. Oh, okay. Because a lot of us did.
I like this because it touches everything. Like the translation goes like this. A learned person who has learned all this knowledge and is humble, he treats a Brahmin. Gavi means a cow. Hastini means elephant. A dog and a dog eater in the same way.
Mm.
So this was interesting for me because when we were discussing at home, Ramesh suggested, okay, he is learning verses, so he suggested, okay, how about this? Immediately it caught my attention because it is touching cow and then the elephant. So I thought this would be a wonderful verse.
Very nice.
I have it.
Did you carry it with you for
no,
some time?
No, it was at home, but I was looking at it.
Looking at during the day. Earlier, Kishore was saying, was it Kishore said he had written a verse and he put it above where he washes dishes so that while he was washing dishes, which apparently he does a lot, he could look at the verse. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Dave G. Hare Krishna.
So, I chose chapter 12 from the Gita. And I decided I'd alternate. So one day I read through the Sanskrit text, and then the next day I read the translation in English.
Oh.
And so I switched every day. And then I guess the reason why I chose it was I guess first inspiration was Srinivas Prabhu, who always made a point that his favorite verse was chapter 12, 13 to 14. And I guess I'll read it.
Yes.
Yeah, it says, one who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think of himself a provider, and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me, such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. So, I guess I just chose that chapter based on that. And today, actually, is very stressful at work, and I didn't have my copy with me at work, so I found the verses at asitis.com, and I went there and read it. It's just maybe more level-headed at work. He's able to during my lunch break. So.
This is a nice point. Let's give him a hand. But, you know, it attaches you to the verse, and then when you're away from it, somehow you leave it in your scrubs, or you forget it, or something like that. Then you feel separation, and you have to. This means you're thinking of Krishna, because you know you're feeling separation from that verse, from that instruction from Krishna. We should feel like that, that somehow we want to stay connected, and this is one of the best ways to stay connected through these verses, through these chapters. Gauranga Kishore Prabhu. I just want to make a public service announcement. We are working on a system to have sound in the middle unit so that parents, when they have, when, you know, the kids can come, but when they get restless during the class, you can take them back to the middle unit and you'll also be able to hear the class. Public service announcement. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I want to thank you for last week's class. I feel like I kind of fallen off the wagon, so to speak, on my shloka. So I did chapter a day of Gita.
Oh.
18th chapter.
18th chapter. See, when you're a brahmachari, you can do the 18th chapter every day without putting a dent. Okay.
It's been nice. I have a number of shlokas. This I've picked out a few in my reading of Bhagavatam. But the ones I've been most into over the past few days are ones I picked up in Govardhan. Gopi Pranapur chants them before he speaks Bhagavatam class every day. And they're in the new book everyone got, Shri Krishna Lila Stubba.
Lila Stubba.
So this is the last of Asins. I think it's the last one, or the second to last, to Srimad Bhagavatam itself, Krishna as Bhagavatam.
Does everyone know which book he's talking about?
Yeah.
The Krishna Lila Stava?
The one we got as a gift.
Yeah. And if you didn't get one as a gift, you should come see me afterwards.
So
okay.
It consists of 108 obeisances. So one is the Bhagavatam itself. So there's some very nice verses.
Could you show them what you wrote some of your verses on? Just so they know how versatile you could be?
One thing.
These are brahmachari cards. Show them.
Well, it's what I like. I wrote these in the back. The old Java retreat business cards that were here.
Very good. Good for the environment, too.
I knew they would get thrown out if I didn't take them, so I took them for notes and stuff. This was a business card somebody gave me. Well, I won't tell how I got it, but I actually got in a little fender bender with someone. She gave me her card, so it was no longer necessary. But I was taken care of, so I wrote a verse on it. You can write them on all kinds of things. If you buy like any product that has a piece of cardboard or whatever, you can.
This is the green version.
This is the green version.
Very good. And maybe you could relate them also, like the fender bender. You could pick a verse, you know, that reminds you specifically.
I'll just read one of these verses. This is the last one. They're all really beautiful. This is sadhu sadhuta dayan atu ni ati ni chotata kara hana munchakadachan man naimna hrit kanteyos bra. This is O Srimad Bhagavatam, please. You are the, you grant saintliness to those who are unsaintly. Turn asadhus into sadhus. You're very merciful that you uplift those who are very fallen. Please manifest with pure love on my heart and on my tongue.
Very nice. And this is from a devotee who travels the earth trying to find a place where he can go more deeply into the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the kind of mentality we want to cultivate, is that you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam is our goal in life, to enter deeper into the Bhagavatam, to learn the Bhagavatam, to hear the Bhagavatam from the devotees, and so that becomes our main objective. There's so many books to read nowadays, right? You go in a bookstore and it's hundreds, thousands of books. Now there's books on demand, where, you know, they're not in print, but they're waiting there. And if you say, I want to read that, they'll print it. But you can't read all those books. Previously, you know, in other centuries, there was a time when you could say that you've read the major works of the world. Because, you know, everything wasn't available at that time, but just the main canon, you know, what you considered to be educated if you read those. But now it's impossible. Nobody can do it. So what to do? Just concentrate on one thing, Bhagavatam. And if you do that, then, you know, you've got everything. Everything's there from every angle of seeing through the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. The sadhus are presenting all kinds of logic just so that we'll come to the point of surrender to Krishna and be able to hear submissively when we come to the 10th canto. And it's, everything's there perfectly. So, you know, when we're hearing these verses that devotees are picking out too, they're like gems, you know, they're realizations devotees are having. What attracts a particular devotee to a particular verse at a particular time? It's Krishna giving intelligence in a certain way. And when we enter into it ourselves, and then we hear from other devotees how they've entered into different things, this is the meaning of this verse Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Machita makata prana bodhayanta parasparam katayantaschamam nityam tushanti cha ramanti cha. This is what devotees do. They absorb their consciousness, always in thinking of me, Krishna says. Their kata is always about me, and they're always going around enlightening one another and speaking about me in all different ways. And their whole life, their prana is dedicated to me. So this is the way to do this. Through this staying close. I mean, the acharyas in our line, they emphasize these literatures. Now, every acharya in our line is, you know, contributing some literature or is very learned in a certain area, and specifically coming to us through Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, great learned scholars, and then our Srila Prabhupada, who presented his books in such a way that anyone, even a beginner, can read them and get something, and someone at the topmost level can read them and also relish eternally and go deeper and deeper. That's the nature of these books. So we should keep them, and not just keep them, though, and not just distribute them also, but we should also enter into them every day, and hopefully at every minute. And this is one that way that we can do that. Just take something out of it and carry it with you wherever you go, and keep it in your mind always. Keep the mantra going. Tell it to others. If you get some realization, or if you get some verse and you go around and tell 10 devotees, they get a gift and you get it 10 times. And then they'll probably absorb it in a certain way that they'll give it back to you later, that you'll hear it in a different way. And each and every verse is eternally and unlimitedly deep. Satya Prabhu? Thank you very much, Gauranga.
Well, I'm a little embarrassed because I was procrastinating during the week. I wasn't able to write down a verse until you gave me a card and pen tonight. And because you went away this weekend, there was a verse I wanted to actually work on. And I've been thinking about working on it for a while. It's usually verses that come up in the class, you know, or a verse that I hear in a lecture, or I read over and over the Prabhupada's quoting, and somehow, you know, like Vash was saying, it catches your attention, and somehow there's some inspiration there. But a lot of times I don't get around to it till finally, you know. So I thought, finally, I want to memorize this verse, but I couldn't find it in the database. Remember, I started looking it up. I thought the only way I can find it out is if, you know, if I call Vash and he tells me that. You went away and I didn't want to bother you.
It's no bother, say it.
But Krishna inspired him to help me out. So it's a verse from the Madhyalila, in the Sanatan Goswami's Madhyalila 23. Who was it that quoted Madhyalila?
Pravina.
Pravina quoted Madhyalila 20, chapter 23, verse 1. And this is chapter 23, verse 18 and 19, and it's Sanatana Goswami's explanation. Lord Chaitanya's explanation to Sanatana Goswami about progress in devotional service. So it's about the bhava stage. And I wanted to know this verse because, like so many of the other, these verses are meditations that can inspire us, you know. They're like guides, you know, take this step here, meditate on this, and then gradually it becomes revealed. So I wanted to start meditating on this verse, and it's Shantur Marjata Kalatvam Viraktir Manat Sunyata Asabanda Sumutkanta Namagane Saravichi Pasaktis Tad Gunakyatne Pratis tad visatis tausale itya jo nubavasur jata bhavan kuru jane. And it goes like this. When the seed of ecstatic emotion for Krishna fructifies, the following 9 symptoms are manifest in one's behavior. So how do you tell if someone has reached the bhava stage? Here's the signs and symptoms. Forgiveness, concern that time should not be wasted. Detachment, absence of false prestige. Hope, eagerness, a taste for chanting the holy name of the Lord. Attachment to the descriptions about the holy name and the places where the Lord's had his pastime. They're holy places like temples. Attachment to the temple here. We can go to so many places in Silicon Valley, but I mean, if we drive by Baskin Avenue, most devotees are very attached to coming here. Why? Because the Lord and his devotees are here. So that these are called anubhavas, or symptoms, subordinate symptoms. Soon we'll have that little room open.
Well, it's open now. We'll just have sound down there.
And so these are nine symptoms are called anubhavas, and they're subordinate signs of ecstatic emotion. These are visible in a person in whose heart the seed of love of God has begun to fructify. I just noticed over the years, you know, memorizing verses, I've gone through different phases, and it continues to change for me. I started out by learning chapters, you know, and just repeating, you know, chanting the chapter a day. I think the first chapter I learned was the second chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. But I noticed, you know, that not all the verses attracted me, or eventually I'd forget everything, you know, and then I think, well, why have I done this, you know? I chanted it, you know, every day for 5 years and I still forgot it. But it's funny, it always has an effect. It's not never wasted, and even sometimes the people around you get affected. Just like when you chant, you know, when we travel together, Vaish travels a whole recipe of verses, you know, and I become very attached to those, even though I haven't memorized them myself. There's certain things I've picked up that have, you know, stuck in my head. And sometimes it's not even one verse. It may be just one word of a verse that has a profound effect on our consciousness and can awaken us. I'm having this experience right now as I actually am working on a verse. Because a couple of weeks ago, a devotee came to my house and spent a couple of days, and in the evening we started watching Prabhupada DVDs, new ones that are out by Yadavar Das. And these DVDs have commentaries by the devotees that were there with Prabhupada at the time the videos were taken. So they have their remembrances. And one of the remembrances that it's a common theme a lot of the devotees are talking about is when they were in Prabhupada's association, they felt very, very secure. And immediately they become free of anxiety. Didn't matter what was going on. There were so many things were going on that as soon as they came into Prabhupada's association, their anxiety would just go away and they felt safe and secure. And then I was reading one verse in the 11th canto where Krishna is speaking to Uddhava about the qualities of his devotees. And there's one verse where he lists these qualities kind of similar to these, where Krishna said a devotee is satyasara, which means a devotee, his meaning and his strength in life come from the truth itself. What a profound statement. The devotee's meaning and strength in life come from the truth itself. What's the truth? Jiva Swarup Krishna Nitya Das, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. So, Prabhupada, because he has this realization, you know, he projected so much conviction, so much strength, and everything he did had so much meaning because of realization of this truth. And so, you know, one thing led to another. Seeing how the devotees were glorifying Prabhupada in a particular way kind of got me thinking about that his quality. And then I saw it in a verse, so that inspired me to want to know more about it. And so, this is how we go deep, really. It's not that we have to read, you know, memorize chapters and chapters. Sometimes it may be just one word of a verse can have profound effect on us that will stay with us, you know, from this life and into maybe others, like in the case of Gajendra, who memorized verses in his previous life but had the misfortune of becoming an elephant. But it wasn't in vain, because those verses came back to him. Because we're associating with Krishna when Krishna's in these verses, he's in every word, every syllable of every verse. So when we do associate, you know, whether we're, you know, stressed at work, you know, we're taking shelter in that association, and we always get rewarded when we take shelter. It pulls us right out of the illusory energy, and we enter that bubble of the transcendental realm.
Ijo. Thank you very much. So, we could go on and on, and we'd like to, actually. This is the happiness of spiritual life. This is the eternal festival to be engaged 24 hours in hearing and chanting and in service to the Lord. And it's a sad moment when we have to separate from the devotees and from everything. So we should arrange our lives in such a way that we're never out of touch with Krishna and the devotees. And there are many different ways to do that. That's the whole science of Krishna consciousness, how to stay in touch with the Supreme at every moment. And this is one way. Also, you know, memorizing verses. Prabhupada was keen that his preachers, those who are representing Bhagavad Gita and presenting it to people, they knew the Bhagavad Gita, at least a lot of the, you know, the main areas of Bhagavad Gita and the arguments Krishna gives and some of the verses, so that they can present them to others as well with authority. You know, like in spiritual circles, you back it up with a verse. So anyway, sorry if we deprived anybody who also wanted to talk about it. We've run out of time. But for next week, what's our assignment? For next week.
Teacher hasn't told us yet.
Well, there are a lot of different things what you can do. Some things I was thinking, we could go into a specific area and look at some, you know, everyone picking. We could, you know, look at a specific verse and everyone look at it together, and then come back with some a couple of supporting verses or extrapolation. In other words, just like this verse we looked at, Yastu Sarvani Bhutani, that's the sixth verse in the Ishopanishad. Or if we pick one from the Bhagavad Gita, we can look at maybe in the fourth chapter, and then the assignment could be that we read that verse and the purport, and then find some other verses somewhere else that connect up with that, that support it or give a thread that goes along with it. What do you think of that?
What is it again?
Better than nothing, right? Okay,
the
huh? The assignment is to take verse 434 from the Bhagavad Gita, which is Tadvidi Pranipatena Pariprashnena Sevaya Uparakshantite Jnanam Jnaninas Tattvadarshina. Look at that verse. Is that the way we want to go? I just thought of another way we could do it. Huh? That or because, okay, here's another idea. Sorry for jumping around. But that's what education is all about. Okay, so now we started last week with looking at the Guru Vashtakam prayers, and we didn't have time to look at them this week. And I'm very keen that we all come into tune on the Guru Vashtakam prayers, and they feel like home to us wherever we go. Like if you go to Vrindavan and they're singing the Guru Vashtakam prayers, you know those prayers. You know all the words and everything like that. So last week we looked at verse number one, right? Which is Samsara Dhavana Dalita Loka Tranaya Karunya Ganaganatam Praptasya Kalyana Gunarna Vasya Vande Guru Sri Charanaravinda. So this is, I think, more of an exciting assignment. From the first verse, let's look at the first verse. Everyone who doesn't have that verse should come up and see me afterwards. Is anybody who doesn't have the verse, know where to get it? Yes. You know where to get it. Can you take care of these devotees and make sure that they get a copy of it? It's in the songbook. And give them the copy with the word for word in it also. Okay? She'll give you Sri Priya. Do you know Sri Priya? She'll take care of you. She's right behind you. Anybody else doesn't know where to get the Guru Vashtakam? It's in the songbook. You know Sri Vatsa where to get it. Which page is it on? Gaura Kishore will show you. 18? It's on page 18. Page 18, and we're going to look at the first verse that we just recited, and look at that verse carefully. Look at the word for word, and then I want you to find a couple of verses, two verses at least, from other places in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, or anywhere within the Srila Prabhupada's books that will illuminate what that verse is saying. In other words, you know, as an example, it's saying samsara dhavanada lida loka, that this world of birth and death, it's like a forest fire. Okay, look around. Do some searching. If you don't have a Veda base, call some devotees. Look through the Bhagavad Gita index. Do get creative. Whatever way you can do. What is it?
I say if anyone doesn't, they should get a library of Vedic cultures.
Okay, and if you don't have it, then you'll get a library of Vedic culture CD.
Veda base.
The Veda base is there. You can put it on your computer. If you don't know about that, you see Gauranga Kishore afterwards. He'll take care of you. Okay, so you have to find two verses, at least two verses, that relate to that, that come from some other place, that illuminate anything about that first stanza in the Guru Vashtakam prayers. If you've understood, then clap your hands. Okay. If you haven't understood, clap your hands. Okay. All right, so that's the assignment for next week, yes.
Could we have some kind of homework assignment also related to Lord Chaitanya?
Yes, and in addition, a homework assignment that will be related to Lord Chaitanya for next week is to also, this is in addition, to find one verse from any shastra that's a verse that's beautiful to you that talks about one of the qualities or activities or a nature of Lord Chaitanya. Either written, well, anyway, anything that's related to Lord Chaitanya. Is that okay? A verse about Lord Chaitanya. That shouldn't be too hard to find. And if you have any questions about that also, Sri Priya will help you out. She's right back there. Yeah, Sri Priya will help you out. Thank you, Sri Priya. Okay, so that's the assignment for next week. You have to write at least two verses, find some verses, be creative, that go along, and have some little realization or commentary that goes along with that first verse of Guru Vashtakam, and also bring in one gem verse. Try to find a gem verse about Lord Chaitanya. Search the earth planet. Pull out all your Rolodex and, you know, look up all your old sannyasi friends, wherever they are, and call them and ask them for some verse, some gem verse about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then bring that in also as we're getting closer. Actually, we're starting the Gaur Purnima monthly Sankirtan festival begins this Friday at what time? 6:59 p.m. And it starts at University and Emerson Street, and we're going to have cookies to pass out because Jagarini Mataji is going to come down and make cookies on all day Friday. She'll be baking. And then on Saturday, we're going to all go out on Sankirtan. Hopefully, at least 86 devotees are going out for a book distribution. Anyone can come. You don't have to have a PhD in this, but you can come out and watch and help. And we invite everybody and all your friends and family to come out for Sankirtan Saturday and Sunday. And then Gaur Purnima will be the following week, and we're also going to have Sankirtan all weekend then. And by the way, Satyadev Prabhu is leaving the Sunday after Gaur Purnima, so take advantage of his association as much as you can before he leaves, because it's a dark day when he gets on that plane and takes off for Japan, and he won't be back until April, May, June. June what?
June 15th.
June 15th at what time? Anyway, 11 o'clock. Okay. We'll be counting the days until you get back. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Gopri Manande. Hari Hari Bo.